It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond, along with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
Hola, mi amiga.
Trying to make it to another day or two, and then we'll have a 2019, will actually be a new brand new year for us. And we have our New Year's episode that'll be coming up in a day or two. Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, man?
What's going on, guys? Looking forward to talking a little Pirate Hoops, and then also the silly season coaching carousel, however you want to term it. And that's something that it's, for the most part, calmed down quite a bit, and that's not surprising with the early signing date. But yeah, a couple major changes today, one at a, quote, group of five school, and then another at a power five school. So we'll talk about those.
It absolutely is amazing for Sam Raz. He's going to come on with us to talk about the Houston situation with Major Applewhite. We'll be talking to him. And Antoine Staley, who follows the Miami situation, the Miami Dolphins, and he also covers the University of Miami with Mark Richt. That was a real shocker. We've been talking about on this podcast, thank you, Kyle and Bubba, we've been talking about University of Houston. We knew Major Applewhite, that was a chance that could happen going all the way, I think, Kyle, you said Christmas, so you have to tip my hat to both of you on that one, and that's an interesting situation. We'll be talking to them, both of them, about the coaching changes and much more, and that'll be coming up in a little while here, but first, we've got some other stuff we can talk about, right?
Yeah, definitely. Pirate Hoops picked up a 20-point win over North Carolina A&T in their final non-conference game of the season. And Pirates are going to be taking a 7-5 mark into SMU on Wednesday night.
I was saying, and they're going to Dallas, like you were saying, to SMU.
Yeah, I mean, the first AAC game against SMU. SMU's, I think, 8-4 now, if I'm not mistaken. And recently picked up about an 8 or 10-point win over Georgetown. So, we'll certainly have our work cut out for us in Dallas on Wednesday night.
No doubt about it. When you think, Kyle, you and I talked about this a couple nights ago. We were talking about Pirate Hoops, and after we talked to each other after the win on Friday night, and it's going to be interesting to see how well the Pirates respond. It was such a great way. We lost, of course, in A&T in basketball. We unfortunately lost in football, which was amazing.
Oh, God.
And so we're like, can we please beat A&T?
Yeah,
and I think if they had, to me, Bubba, I hadn't had a chance to talk to you about it, but if I felt like they were going to get a win against A&T, but the way that they played together, and I know Jeff Charles and Cy Seymour talked about it, that's the best game they've played all year in this young season.
Yeah, I thought we played pretty well. We definitely turned the ball over more than we would like. And I think we had 16 or 17 turnovers, and a large percentage of those came in the first half where, if I'm not mistaken, it seems like we were much more crisp in the second half. But Jaden Gardner, what can you say about that guy? He had his fifth double-double in 12 games, and he had 27 and 13. So now he's averaging 19 points and 9 rebounds.
Yeah.
And he's also he's also shooting nearly 80% from the free throw line, which is really, really solid, to say the least, for a big man.
For a big guy. And I tell you what, you said this all night, but he has the potential to do amazing things. We can keep him healthy. Obviously, he's a great kid. He's not getting in trouble. I don't see that happening. Very smart kid. He's going to do great in the classroom. He has a chance, if he stays here all 4 years, to be one of the best players we've ever had in East Carolina. I'm a huge fan of him, and Dooley's doing a nice job of building the program. I know, Kyle, you and I talked about it, and you said it before, so I'll give you credit, and I agree with you 1,000%. I don't think there's a question of if the program is going to get better under Dooley. The question is, how long can we keep these great coaches together? If we can keep these coaches together 4 or 5 years, like a whole, not a recruiting cycle, but a 4 years worth, then, oh my gosh, this program, we could actually be going from a joke and an embarrassment to relevant in basketball.
Yeah, the staff's really good. It's on paper one of the best staffs, if not the best staff we've ever had here. So I think give Dooley of these guys time if he can keep his staff together. And I think it's just a matter of time, and we'll turn it around. Like, I don't think we're going to be going to the Final Four, but, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, I think we'll be competing in this conference and for you know, NIT and NCAA tournament appearances.
That's the thing that, for me, is that I don't think there's any Pirate fan out there, as much as all three of us love the Pirates, and we do. It would be incredible if there's ever that kind of run. I would, I'd probably have a heart attack from passing out, being an unbelievable. But as far as winning, and winning conference championships, which I think is possible, it's a great league. There's tons of talent out there that Dooley and the staff, I mean, Dooley alone has a ton of connections. And when you go, Kim Bataznik has a ton of connections. As far as recruiting, Rafael Chilius, oh my God, and then Steve Rockeford, are you kidding me? I mean, those four guys, it's almost unfair. And for people, by the way, they use a term which we can't stand, that we were talking about this before the podcast, Power Five. Look at those coaches. I mean, Rockeford came from Virginia Tech. That's a top 25 team, oh, by the way. You look at Chilius a few years ago, he's the top assistant under Kevin Ollie, and they won the national championship at UConn. I mean, that's unheard of at East Carolina, and it probably people think I'm exaggerating. I'm still in shock of how great, and Bubba, you know this, how much I love basketball, and Kyle, you know how much I love basketball. For the fact that Dooley was able to put that staff together still is mind-blowing, and I know I'm a Dooley apologist, but around town in Greenville, I can tell you guys, working in Greenville, I haven't heard this much excitement for Pirate basketball probably since, what, the CIT, I would say, probably 2013. It's been a long
number of years. Yeah.
It's been a number of years since I've heard people wouldn't even mention. It was like Pirate basketball didn't exist, you know. And now it's nice to have people talking to me and interacting with me. They know I love ECU, and they're like, man, your Pirates got to, you know, the Pirates got to win. Or the people that are Pirate fans say, good gracious, Pirates played great last night. And it's just refreshing to see. Of course, we talk about football all the time, and baseball is doing well under Cliff Godwin. It's nice to have Dooley back, and it's nice to win by 20 points, 77-57. Huge night for the Pirates on Friday night. So, guys, do you want to go now to Sam Raz? You want to introduce him?
Yeah, with the news that Major Applewhite was being fired from the University of Houston, we reached out to our good friends at the Scott and Holman podcast, and or actually Scott and Holgo podcast, as they renamed it, hoping that they can hire Dana Holgerson from West Virginia to be the new head coach of the Houston Cougars. But we caught up with Sam Raz from the Scott and Holman podcast.
Great to have now Sam Raz of the Scott and Holman podcast from Houston and the Cougs. Sam, thanks so much for coming back on with us.
Thanks, y'all, for having me.
Well, just as I told you beforehand, we wanted to have you on because it's nice to know there's a school besides East Carolina having some dysfunction in American, and I wanted to bring you on to talk about something we brought up last week, right, Kyle? We were talking about Major Applewhite might be fired at Houston, and lo and behold, it's happened. So we wanted to have you on to talk about what's next for the Cougs.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week for us, for sure. Obviously, the basketball program has done good stuff on the court, but I'd be lying if I didn't say a lot of the oxygen in Cougar discussion has been taken up by, you know, the will he or won't he of Major Applewhite being the man to lead this program any further.
What was his job? Was it being discussed, Sam, about his job being on the line prior to that bowl game, or is this like a result? I mean, it can't be directly a result of the on the field performance against Army in the bowl game. Obviously, you know, how much of it had to do with losing Kendall Briles and the sideline stuff with Ed Oliver over the jacket and just that whole ridiculousness, and then the collapse the second half of the season. What led to this?
I think really the root underlying cause of all this is that a good chunk of the fan base and donor base was not really sold on this hire from the get-go. He was, when we looked at the four finalists for the job, last go around a couple years ago. It was Lane Kiffin, current FAU coach, Les Miles, current Kansas coach, Todd Orlando, current University of Texas defensive coordinator at the time, Houston defensive coordinator, and Applewhite. And Applewhite sure seemed to be the fourth most qualified and fourth most popular choice, and it really surprised a lot of folks when he was announced as the head coach. So I think a lot of people, you know, I think everyone wants the program to do well if you're a Houston fan and Houston booster and what have you. But I think a lot of people were pretty surprised at the hire, weren't very impressed with the first year. I think the bowl game wasn't the direct reason Major Applewhite was fired. I think it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. You mentioned the second half collapse. He's, you know, Major isn't really an outspoken guy, and I think the job not so much requires, but certainly good to have someone who's a real strong salesman of the program, and that's just, for better or for worse, not his nature. And I just think it was really hard to look ahead at 2019 and say, yeah, I could see Major getting this program to 10 or 11 wins and at least a division title. And you mentioned, you know, Ed Oliver and the jacket thing, and I don't really think that had anything to do with it, but I do think the fact that, you know, in Ed Oliver's 3 years on campus at Houston, he wasn't able to even get a division title for his efforts, certainly by no fault of his own. So I think some eyes started looking towards the coaching, just, well, you know, it's not the players, you know, what's the missing piece here? And I think it just kind of came back to bring it all 180 here, that really a lot of people weren't happy with the hire from day one and certainly weren't happy with the hire after the conclusion of the Armed Forces Bowl.
You mentioned Applewhite not being outgoing. Is it safe to say he was hard to get along with, or am I reading that wrong? I just picked that up, and I've heard people mention that he's not the easiest guy to get along with. Is that accurate on my part, or is that overstating?
You know, I'm not sure, but I will say when he got hired, the Texas High School Football Coaches Association wrote this real glowing letter about how they believe Major Applewhite was the best guy for the job and all that. So I think he actually got the job because he's a little bit more polished interviewer than the guy who was our defensive coordinator, who ended up moving on to the University of Texas. But I don't think he was as well connected in coaching circles as maybe he sold the administration. I mean, his two initial coordinator hires were both just really bad failures, and you know, he hired Kendall Briles, and that worked out pretty well, but you know, that didn't take any skill to hire him. It just took the ability to take the negative PR of hiring someone pretty close to the Baylor scandal. I also don't think he was very skilled with the kind of stuff you have to do to deal with boosters at a program with a lot of people have outsized expectations. I think it's become very clear that the people around this program expect big things. I'm not sure if he was really the guy to sell that he was the one to deliver the big things. I don't think he's really a natural salesman.
Sam, I wanted to ask you, as far as Applewhite, how many people right now are upset that he's gone? Is it a big backlash, or are people really?
No, I think the closest thing to backlash is maybe a few people saying that, and this is an argument I can't disagree with. Houston did have a just catastrophic injury crisis this year, especially in the defensive side of the ball. The entire starting defensive line had season-ending injuries, injuries in Ed Oliver's case, just got hurt and really didn't want to rush that back and risk serious, I guess, complications with that. So he didn't get lucky on an injury perspective this year. Really, after the East Carolina game, honestly, just U of H just started losing key players left and right. He eventually lost Derek King for the last regular season game in the bowl game. So he didn't get lucky from that perspective. But just no one's very upset. He wasn't a popular coach. I think whether you're talking about just the general fans at large or the big dollar people, I don't think really after about the last week or two of the season, there was anyone really strongly in Major Applewhite's camp and upset that he wouldn't be coming back as head coach.
Who are some of the top candidates you're hearing? I mean, I saw one earlier today, Dan Holgorsen being mentioned. I don't know how realistic that is. Obviously, he's got plenty of Texas ties, but taking a guy from a Big 12 school to an American Conference school maybe not be the most realistic thing. Do you think that is a possibility to get Holgorsen, or who are some of the other names you're hearing?
You know, to some degree, I'm going to believe the Daniel Holgorsen stuff when I see him, you know, on the podium accepting the Houston job. Some part of me just won't believe that happens until it happens. But you kind of peel back the layers of the onion on it, and it's actually more realistic than, you know, on the face of it, a Big 12 coach leaving for an American Conference school. I think this past year, West Virginia had some good moments, but really considering it was a very senior-heavy team, you know, most notably Will Grier among them, they really underperformed. They weren't in the Big 12 title picture when it was all said and done this year, and this was the year Dana Holgorsen needed to get them in serious Big 12 title contention. And after January 1st, his buyout drops to $1 million, and he mentioned his ties to Texas, and really, even more specifically, he still has a home in the Houston area. He still, especially in the offseason, lives primarily in Houston. When he worked at Oklahoma State in Stillwater, he was living in Houston. He's someone who still keeps very close ties to this area and left here, you know, on a very high note, still has a good relationship with at least some of the boosters, has a relationship with Tillman Fertitta, the U of H super booster and president of the University of Houston Board of Regents. So to some degree, I'll always doubt it until it happens, but I think he's a lot more realistic candidate than perhaps made out to be. And I think a couple other names that I'm interested in is Neil Brown, the current head coach at Troy. He's won 31 games in the last 3 years, has some Texas ties himself. Culturally, U of H is very much an air raid, prolific offensive school, and he's someone who comes from that Mike Leach air raid tree. And Cliff Kingsbury, who just got fired at Texas Tech and accepted the Southern Cal offensive coordinator job, he was offensive coordinator at Houston for a couple years. He actually started his coaching career at the University of Houston, still well-regarded, kind of like Holgorsen, still has some ties to the area. So I think those are the big three names I'm looking at right now: Holgorsen, Neil Brown, and Cliff Kingsbury.
Any interest from the UH fan base in Seth Luttrell?
I think there's I think he'd be an interesting candidate. I just I think he's holding out for something bigger. He nearly took the Kansas State job, and I think would have taken it if there weren't so much weird stuff around there. You know, they obviously don't want to do anything to anger Bill Snyder. They just, you know, it's almost like a weird cult of personality around the guy there. So I think he would have taken that job under normal circumstances. And honestly, I think Seth Luttrell, he's a good candidate. If ultimately he's who we get, I'd be fine with that. I might even like that a little more than Kingsbury, being honest. But I think he's holding out for a P5 opening in the next year or so.
Interesting.
When is there like a deadline? Have they said for Sam Ford when they want to have the coach in place? It was kind of funny. We were talking about the whole Montgomery situation we had at East Carolina. Would you fire Montgomery after signing day so you get all those recruits after they've signed? So now it becomes a situation, is there a deadline right now?
You know, I'm not sure. And as this last week has proven, the University of Houston doesn't always have a concrete plan for how it's going to act. So I do think after January 1st, when Dana Holgorsen's buyout drops to $1 million, I think we're going to see with that whether or not he's really serious about taking the Houston job. I think we're going to find out quickly whether it's just him kicking the tires and trying to get, I don't know, a raise out of West Virginia, although that doesn't seem very realistic because I think he's going into 2019 on a hot seat there. And I think we'll find out pretty quickly if that's going to happen. And from there, I don't know. It's an odd situation because we're past signing day at this point. So the urgency to sign a coach really isn't as strong as maybe it would have been back when the February signing day was the kind of one and only deadline there.
Have you guys heard anything from, I don't know what your 24/7 arrival site is, but have you guys heard anything on those sites from recruits, from the new signees that have just signed, because we just passed, you know, early signing day? What is their reaction to the guy that just signed them getting fired?
You know, honestly, I have not seen anything about it yet. I think, and honestly, to be frank, I trust our rivals and scout guys about as far as I can throw them.
You have a 24/7 site. We're pretty friendly with those guys.
I like 247 Sports a lot more too. But I haven't seen anything yet about it. It's an odd recruiting class too. It's one of Applewhite's biggest misses was we took a lot of grad transfers in the last 2 years, and virtually none of them really turned into solid contributing players. So U of H is real scholarship hampered this year. I think they can max out at 20 signees. So I guess, you know, they have 13 signees in, but I do think you're just gonna lose some players from this class. That's just inevitable when you have a coaching change. The real interesting storyline, one you guys might not know about, is I'll be curious. I still lean towards thinking he'll stay with Houston, but De'Eriq King was especially close with Major Applewhite. Major Applewhite was his primary recruiter when Applewhite was the OC here. I think generally enjoyed a very close relationship with him. And, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's obviously high risk. He's not guaranteed to get a penalty-free transfer somewhere, but it wouldn't be unheard of for, I don't know, him to use his last year of eligibility somewhere else just because, you know, he didn't want to deal with his third coaching change and 3 seasons here at Houston.
He already graduated.
He is not. That's the thing. He is not a fourth-year junior, which makes it a little less likely and a little more complicated. He's a third-year junior. As far as I know, he hasn't graduated early, but I do know coaching changes occasionally allow for penalty-free transfers. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. I'll be interested to see if I think hiring someone with the offensive credentials like a Holgorsen, you know, might make him want to stay, but at the same time, I do get that he had a close relationship with Applewhite, and he had a really good relationship with Kendall Briles, who's now at Florida State. So I think that'll be a storyline that's at least somewhat interesting to watch. I think I'm more focused on that right now than the 2019 signing class, where I'm sure we'll lose at least a handful of guys because of the change.
Well, the guys have already signed. They can't go anywhere. But you said you still had 7 scholarships available for February?
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, I think that's I think we had 14 guys sign on signing day there, so I believe we have 6 slots open currently.
Okay.
Sam, I have a question for you. This is pertaining to your response a few minutes ago, just talking about the University of Houston, how it operates administratively, and how sometimes there seems to be the absence of a plan. Last night, Pete Thamel put out an article on Yahoo.com saying I didn't have a chance to read much of the article, just being busy with my kids, but it said, column on the administrative gong show at Houston as Major Applewhite dangles in the wind, Big 12 officials chuckle at their low rent desperation to join. So just your response to that article, and then also just generally speaking, the administration there at Houston, what are your thoughts and opinions? Because obviously things are going extremely well in basketball, as you referenced earlier, with the top 25 ranking and 13-0 mark thus far. And then, of course, Houston baseball is always very strong.
Yeah, and I would just say, like, you know, you can criticize the decision process this administration has made without, like, taking the shots that Thamel did. The university president that U of H has right now, Renu Couture, has, you know, I remember what U of H was before she got there. I'm now aware of, you know, what U of H is, you know, after about 10 years of her being here. And I got to tell you, like, she's done so much to raise the profile of this university academically, athletically, facilities-wise. It's just someone who has worked their butt off, you know, in a state that really isn't very interested in University of Houston being anything more than a city college. She's done a lot more to really just push the profile of this university. And to call her an empty suit, I think, was a real low blow. I really think, and I feel strong about this, Pete Thamel wrote this 100% to curry favor with a source, whether that's an agent of Tom Herman or Major Applewhite or someone at the Big 12 he's buds with. It really had this weird sort of personal attack kind of vibe, which you don't really see very often, even from, you know, an opinion column. There's a lot of shots at people from someone who probably only has a real superficial knowledge of, you know, the University of Houston and what the University of Houston does. A lot of, like, local Houston sports people, not even, like, you know, U of H people, alums or what have you, just local, like, you know, TV and print media people were really taken aback by that, just the attack of it. And I think you could say that U of H didn't plan this well. I think in terms of just, I don't know, kind of just letting it leak out there and then not responding and giving these kind of, I guess, half endorsements, but not even really half endorsements to Applewhite. I think it would have served a lot of people better to have gotten this out of the way a lot quicker. But ultimately, University of Houston is well within their right. Like, a lot of money is spent on athletics here. University of Houston is well within their right to have a high expectation for it, you know? And it's not, you know, it's not Pete Thamel's money. It's not the taxpayers of Texas's money that are going to buy out this coach. It's the people who spend lots of money and time on the University of Houston football program. It's, you know, it was a change that was kind of quick and maybe sudden from, I guess, if you're only casually familiar with the program, but I think no one was going to be done any favors by Major Applewhite sticking around a third year and basically seeing this season, but with a much harder schedule and without Ed Oliver and pretty much the entire defense.
Is there any move, Sam, I know with the fan base, but is there any move that they want to see you guys move to a Power 5 league?
Yeah, I think that, you know,
no, this like urgency more, that's why you get rid of.
Yeah, that's really the context behind, I think, all of this is just, you know, every mediocre season you have, it feels like it's just it's another, I guess, piece of evidence to the bigger conferences that, you know, U of H really isn't capable of even competing at a high level in their conference. So how are they capable of competing in a tougher league? And I think that, you know, I think that ratchets up the urgency. And I think in the last question, you did a good job pointing out, like, U of H has been successful in other sports. I'm not going to go down sport by sport for the entire athletic department, but really right now, football is the only program that is falling significantly short of expectations, even going into the Olympic sports. Like, all those programs are either competing at the top of the AAC or winning titles. Football is the only program right now that's doing really poorly, and football gets the most attention and financial support, so it's not a matter of lack of resources or lack of history or what have you. It's something wasn't getting done there that needed to get done.
Sam, what the conference, Michael Rasko brought up the potential of the new media rights negotiations of potentially signing a grant of rights. What kind of money would Houston need to see from the TV contract potentially to be willing to sign a grant of rights to the American?
I would think, and I don't have any inside info as to what the top, you know, decision makers at U of H would want to do with that, or if, you know, if any sum of money really would be enough for them. But I would think it would have to be something commensurate with what the current P5 leagues are getting to make U of H sign that and commit to, you know, a league that's good. I mean, ECU and U of H were both in Conference USA, and I gotta say, like, this league right now is a much better league than Conference USA, so it's not a shot at the American, but to sign something that basically says we can't leave here and we can't potentially even pursue the possibility of a P5 league, I think would be a really bitter pill to swallow for the decision makers of the school without, you know, just an amount of money that I think it would be unfair to expect Mike Oresko to command the next media rights deal.
Okay, that's interesting. I was wondering about that because I think it would be.
It might be nothing. There might be no amount of money, you know, University of Houston will expect. I think this league does have enough going for it that if, I don't know, Mike Oresko pulls a rabbit out of a hat and gets this really incredible deal, that U of H would consider it. But I, I would think the decision makers lean towards keeping their options open.
I would think it would be you guys, UCF, and potentially Cincinnati or maybe UConn that would be the hold up on that. But I was wondering what the amount of money would have to be. And in my head, you know, we're getting $2 million per school right now for the TV deal. So in my head, $10 to $12 million, which is significantly less than the Power Five leagues, but significantly more than the rest of the Group of Five. So I didn't know if you'd heard a number. So I don't know. That's interesting to me.
Sam, obviously I know you've been very generous with your time today, but we'd love to have you back on here in about 3 weeks as the Pirates will be traveling to Houston to take on.
Absolutely, yeah.
What are now the 22nd ranked Cougars? Who knows where they'll be ranked then? Hopefully even higher. Hopefully you guys will keep winning as conference play is about to get cranked up. And Kelvin Sampson's ball club is certainly one of the stories around the nation for sure. But the Cougars and Pirates will play twice this year, like I said, January 23rd in Houston. And then on February 27th, the Cougs will visit Williams-Renna Menchie's Coliseum. So we look forward to having you on back here in about 3 weeks.
Absolutely, yeah. No, have me on. Love to talk some hoops.
It's always fun, and good luck to you guys this year with basketball. It's with Joe Dooley, we're starting to see, instead of embarrassing things, we'll see how conference plays out with his first year, but it's been a lot better. There's hope there where there was no hope before.
Yeah, no, I think that was a good hire. I think if he's able to get 11 games for you guys this year, you know, in the win column, I think that's a real positive sign for, you know, things to come in the future.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sam. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Y'all take care now.
All right. Appreciate it. Bye. Enjoyed talking to him, and their podcast is great. And the great thing about podcasters, have you noticed, like, there's a great community of people, and I'm saying that across the board. If you're a podcaster, it's something about when people hear your podcaster, they really want to help you, and they do an excellent job. When I get a chance, I listen to their podcast. Even though I'm not a Houston fan, they do an excellent job, and they're friends of the program, so I like to support them.
Absolutely.
So appreciate them, and I'll make sure to keep, but I'm going to be paying even closer attention to their podcast now that they have the major Applewhite issue. That's done, and who's going to be the next coach? We'll wait and see if they can get Dana Holgorsen. That'll be interesting, to say the least, for sure. Next up, we've got a great one, a guy that we like a lot from Miami, don't we, Bubba?
Yeah, Antoine Staley, East Carolina alum. He's somebody that he writes for Athlon covering the Miami Hurricanes, but also covers the Miami Dolphins for USA Today. And so with the news that Mark Richt was retiring as of Sunday morning, December 30th, so we decided we needed to check in with Antoine Staley and catch up with everything he is hearing as far as Rick's retirement and who they're going to be replacing him with.
One of our favorite guests is back on. Surprisingly not, we wanted to have him back on, but this is actually breaking news. So we want to have Antoine Staley back on. Man, thank you so much for coming on short notice with us.
Yeah, no problem.
Big day in definitely in Miami, where you're actually in Buffalo covering the Dolphins, one of your team. I'm trying to keep up all the teams. Can you tell everybody, first off, all the teams you cover?
Oh, it's just Miami Dolphins and Miami Hurricanes. That's pretty much it right there.
Right, just the two? Okay, the two Miamis. Okay. Well, I know that we'll start off with breaking news. I understand, surprisingly, Mark Richt retiring. Was that something that came out of left field for me? Was that something maybe I missed on my radar?
I had heard rumblings last night that this might be a possibility, but I just thought it might be just, you know, kind of stressed after a long year, and I didn't think much of it. And then the news came down today that, yeah, he in fact was retiring. But, yeah, it definitely was a little bit of a surprise, especially considering he was expected to stay there a little bit longer. Right. Try to get the program right, and this year was just tough for him with a lot of different levels, personally and definitely professionally, and he ended up losing Manny Diaz, even going to Temple and taking the job there, and I guess he just thought it was better just to walk away.
It seems like with these coaches, I'm going to use this analogy, I haven't even told the guys, but you know, like in tennis, when the players are having a bad game, they quote-unquote retire, they just leave the match. Seems like we got college football coaches doing that now. They just get kind of tired, like Urban Meyer. Now, Mark Recknay, they like say a week, I throw in the towel, and then a few years later they'll be on ESPN and get another job. I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, Rick almost retired the first time when he got fired from Georgia. So
yeah,
it was definitely a lot of question of how much he had left in the tank. And first 2 years in Miami, really good. Won 9 games his first year. Won 10 last year. Had the program as high as in the college football playoff at one point in time, especially with their 10-0 start. But yeah, it's just kind of came crashing down through 3-game losing streak to end the year 2017. And just never really got things going this year. The Hurricanes have been in the last 16 games of 7-9, got blown out against LSU to start out the year, and just kind of was behind the eight ball the entire year. And recruiting just suffered, and you just thought it was better just to maybe get a younger person in there.
Any ideas right now who the Hurricanes are going to look at to replace Coach Rick? I mean, you're hearing different names on the internet, all over the place. What are you hearing?
I mean, a lot of people have talked about Mario Cristobal, the head coach at Oregon, but I have a hard time believing he would leave Oregon and consider the situation that he's in, and that's the number one recruit coming in there next year. Also has Justin Herbert returning, one of the best quarterbacks in college football, and just the fact that their facilities and everything around Oregon, I know you don't have the hot recruiting bet that you have in South Florida, but I honestly think Oregon is a better job than Miami. And also, the fact of the matter is you don't have to contend with Clemson as well to try to win a conference championship. I think the path is definitely better in the Pac-12 than it is the ACC. So I would be surprised if he left, but he's definitely going to be on the top of the list, especially considering Miami likes to hire people that have been in their organization and been alumni, and he's definitely one of the biggest fishes there. You could hear Manny Diaz possibly, maybe leaving his situation. I think that would be hard to do, but that's another name that you hear. That's probably the top two names as of right now that are kind of linked. And also Butch Davis. Obviously, Butch Davis and his ties there with the University of Miami are well known.
One name that came up tonight, I believe it was by Dennis Dodd. Bubba, correct me if I'm wrong on that. It's current Baylor head coach Matt Rhule. Matt is in his second year at Baylor, took over a disastrous situation down there with that scandal, and in year number two, takes them to a 7-win season and a nice win at their bowl game. We know Matt real well in East Carolina from his time at Temple, being in the American. He's one of the best coaches in the game. What are your thoughts on him, if any? I think he'd be an excellent choice if you guys can get him from Baylor.
I think it would be too. Yeah, I followed him as well when he was at Temple, me being an alumni of East Carolina, so. Yeah, I think that would be a really ideal fit. The only problem is I know a lot of people in Hurricanes within that fan base and within that whole circle, like somebody that understands what it's like to be a part of the U and the culture and everything like that, he would definitely be an outsider. But I feel like at some point you're going to have to hire somebody that's maybe an outsider, and hopefully that can come in and maybe do their own thing. I definitely think he would be a really good hire there. To be completely honest, because he's been able to win wherever he is, and definitely get a good job at Temple, did a good job at Baylor. I don't think, especially with the recruiting bases down there in South Florida, there's no reason to think why he can't do a good job there.
Absolutely.
In addition to Mario Cristobal and Matt Rhule, like Kyle just mentioned, some other names that were thrown out there by different people, some of these are Dennis Dodd at CBS. Of course, this guy is someone who been in the big time before, both as a head coach and as an assistant. And then he's done a solid job at FAU, even though they were down this year. Lane Kiffin, what about him? You got Troy coach Neil Brown, former Indianapolis Colts coach, who was an assistant under Butch Davis, and that's, of course, Chuck Pagano. And then another name that was thrown out there this evening is Mike Leach. Of course, Mike Leach, I believe he still has a home in Key West.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Mike Leach has been linked to the Hurricanes job a few times, but it seems like to me they just never really wanted to target him for whatever reason. I'm not sure why, considering everything. Considering he's won just about everywhere. I mean, won everywhere he's been. I definitely think he'd be a great hire, especially with all the recruiting, with the recruiting base down in South Florida. Chuck Pagano obviously will be ties there, him coaching there previously. So you definitely see there I out of those names, I definitely could see Lane Kiffin possibly being somebody they could target there. Where somebody young, energetic, already knows the area too, would definitely ignite the fan base and somebody they could get behind. I definitely think out of those guys that you mentioned, he might be the likely scenario there in South Florida.
He's got the one good thing about Lane Kiffin is he's got the word swagger.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of the word that would match Miami.
Swag. Yeah, he definitely has that swag and young, and you would definitely get the fan base energetic and excited about Miami Hurricanes football again.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, like y'all were talking about the swagger of the youth, you know, of course, from back in the 80s and early 90s, up, I guess, until probably 2001 when they won the national title there under Larry Coker, kind of the same deal. But Miami's kind of the East Coast version, if you will, of Southern Cal.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. You got to have the right, and that's one thing, Antoine, any situation, including with East Carolina, you've got to have the right fit. There's a lot of great coaches that can come to Greenville or can come down to Miami, but they have to be the right fit. And that's my thing. It doesn't necessarily always work out the way that you think it will.
Yeah, I think Miami is a unique situation where it's a nice job to have with that recruiting base, but also the fact of the matter is I think the fan base believes it's a better job than what it really is. This is because of the five national championships, the distinct allure. And they haven't had that in, like, 15-plus years. 2004 is really the last year they've really had a very, very good season, and it started to go downhill ever since then. So I don't know if they could ever get back to those glory days. Probably not in this college football climate, but I definitely think it's a place for Miami to be in college football, and I think they can be a perennial top 20, top 15 team consistently in college football. There's no reason to, especially with all the talent that they have down there.
I just want to change subject with you just for a second, Antoine.
Yeah.
Being a former Pirate, what do you think of the Mike Houston hire up here? Fan base is pretty excited about it. Mike's won at every level he's been at. You know, national championship, James Madison took Lenore Ryan to a national championship game at the D2 level. What do you think of our new head coach up here?
I think it's a home run hire when JMU. I think he's gonna do a great job. I'm really excited about it, and hopefully he can start to turn things around there. It's been you look at how long it's been since East Carolina's been in the bowl game. It's been a long time, especially for their standards.
2014,
for their standards. So yeah, I definitely think that he's gonna come in and do a good job, and I think he definitely has one thing about Scotty Montgomery. They didn't win a lot of games, but it is some talent there. He did recruit a little bit of talented players, and I definitely think that maybe 6 wins next year would be out the question.
No, I agree.
It's definitely with when you take the talent that we have and you take the coaching that we have, the coaches that we have are just phenomenal. And it's probably the best coaching staff we've had as far as not only you got a nice blend of young and old and guys that are, I guess they could quote-unquote relate to the players, but then you have guys that can really teach the game too. I really like Brandon Lynch and the secondary, one of the secondary coaches, but
yeah.
You have him, and then you have a guy like Bob Trott who's been around the NFL and under Bill Parcells. I mean, you know, the guy's been around, I think he's been, Bubba, 7 times as a D coordinator. So I like the way that Coach Houston's done that, and I think the just being around Coach Houston in the same room with him, you can't help but think that they're I hate to think if it could be worse than what we've lived through the last 3 years.
Yeah, it was rough. Scotty Montgomery, I met him a couple of times. Definitely a nice guy, but as you know, it's a responsible-based business, and yeah, just didn't get the job done there. But I definitely think he recruited a lot of talented players there, and yeah, I think everything what I've read and listened to the press conferences and just kept up on Mike Houston definitely seems like a great hire. And somebody, probably the most excitement I had is looking at the coaching assistants and everything. Probably maybe still Skip, maybe throw Ruffin in there as well. But I definitely think he has that type of excitement. I'm not saying they're going to bring a lot of conference championships or anything like that, but I definitely think that you're gonna see a definitely increase in wins while he's up there in Greenville.
I have a question for you, Antoine. Obviously, yeah. you cover Miami for a living. You have a strong interest in the ECU program. Here recently, the Virginia Tech and ECU series, unfortunately, looks like it's going to come to an end with them pulling out of all games in Greenville. And then I can't imagine that we'll go to Blacksburg. We'll see what happens there. But we have a lot of openings on the schedule, and the first one's next year. So we're trying to get that sixth home game solidified, get something nailed down, and Kyle and I, as well as other ECU media outlets, we're looking at Miami's schedule and see that they have an opening next year. Do you have any idea what the Hurricanes plan to do there?
Not exactly right now. That'd be something that I guess we'll have to ask maybe once they figure out what they do with head coach. That could definitely be a question I'll ask, but yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. I forgot about that until you said something. But, yeah, it is an opening there, so it's always potential for them to play opponents. Obviously, Miami and ECU played a number of times in the 90s. They hadn't really played each other in a long time, but it's definitely history there. So, I mean, hey, you know, why not? Why not get it together? But, yeah, these two programs definitely have played each other many, many times, especially in the 90s. So it's definitely something that I could see possibly happening.
Put in a good word for us, Anton. We need them to come here first. We'll give them a 2-for-1.
We played them. We had them at, obviously, they were supposed to, unfortunately, as everybody knows, the 99 game in and moved to Raleigh from because of Hurricane Floyd. But, I mean, they were supposed to come here to Greenville. So it's not like they were not going to come. It's just the weather, unfortunately, dictated.
Hell, they went to Boone 2 years ago. So.
They did, yeah. So it's definitely they played Toledo. They played a lot of different parts. Cincinnati a few years ago. So yeah,
they were supposed to go to Arkansas State.
Correct.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, definitely. And Hurricane killed that.
Kind of coincidentally, another team that has an opening for next year at this late date is FIU. So you haven't heard anything about who they're looking at potentially scheduling, because I know they already have 6 home games and they're. The date they have available actually matches up with September 21st, which is when ECU Virginia Tech was supposed to happen.
Hey, that'd be good too. Butch Davis definitely has their program going in the right direction, and that's, you look at the programs in South Florida football wise, they're the best one at the moment. FIU ended up not making a bowl game. FAU, excuse me, and the University of Miami finished 7-6 this year, so. Yeah, that definitely things going down at FIU. And, yeah, I mean, that would definitely be a really good matchup between the two schools.
Do you think Butch Davis will be a serious candidate for the Miami job? I mean, you know, a lot of people thought, you know, he was DOA, so to speak, when North Carolina fired him. And then he goes down to FIU and just immediately wins. I mean, just overnight turns that thing around. Yeah. So
he wins everywhere he goes. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah, they interviewed him the last time. But ended up going with Mark Ritt. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure he'll be at least talked about among the brass there.
In fact, there were some folks that said, wasn't it 2016 it was 2015 when Ruffin was fired, there was talk that he was interested in the ECU job?
That I was told, you always hear hearsay, but I was told that Butch reached out to our former horrible athletic director, Jeff Confer, about the East Carolina job, and was basically turned down because of the North Carolina stuff.
I heard the same thing, too, as well.
Yeah, and I believe it because Jeff Confer was and you're not saying this, Anton, I am. Jeff Confer was a babbling fool. So,
well, I was going to say,
how do you really feel, Kyle?
So, I was going to say incompetent, but yeah, that works.
Yeah, we have a hard time getting Kyle to express himself. If you notice that on the podcast, I don't know if Antoine, if you notice that, but we have a hard time to really for him to. He just holds back so much.
Yeah, I can tell. I can definitely tell.
So I wanted to ask you about the Dolphins. As far as one of our favorite wide receivers, Zay Jones. How did he do today? I've been actually doing my real job, so I didn't get a chance to. I'm doing that part as far as pro football today. I'm a little blind.
He scored a big touchdown early in the game, and yeah, he's been playing a lot better as of late. I had obviously watched a lot of their games where they not playing the Dolphins, but yeah, he scored. I know he scored one earlier this year when he played in Miami, and he definitely scored one early in the game to make the game 14-0 early on against the Dolphins today. And yeah, he's definitely playing a lot better, and I can see the chemistry with him and Josh Allen are having. And it's fun. I mean, I'm not obviously I don't cover the Bills, but I love watching Josh Allen play. I know he's has some accuracy issues, but the man is exciting to watch. So yeah, definitely you can see that chemistry building between those two.
Bills are kind of thin at receiver. I'm not a big NFL guy, but aren't the Bills kind of thin at receiver
yes.
right now? Okay.
Yeah, they are.
They have a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, they are, and I definitely think they need a number one guy. I know Zay's probably more of like a two receiver, but he's definitely coming to his own. You could definitely tell between how much better he's gotten at the point when he was a rookie until now. It's definitely light years ahead.
Yeah, a little bit as far as the season that Zay Jones is having, 56 receptions and right at 660 yards and 7 touchdowns. So after having a lot of doubters last year, he's certainly proven those doubters wrong.
Yep.
One thing I love about Zay is the very fact that and some people would argue about his talent, but if you look at, obviously, he's good enough to play in the league, and his work ethic, from my understanding, is tremendous, and that's probably why he is playing in the National Football League. And my God, when you have, I mean, our guys know, if you have Robert Jones as your dad, you're probably playing football 24 hours a day. As much as I love Robert Jones, he's probably like a drill sergeant when they were babies, he was throwing balls to them.
Yeah, that's bloodline. Yeah, just incredible bloodline with him. Of course, Jeff Blake there as well. So, yeah, I'm sure he is always around football.
As far as the Dolphins, what do you think? They're one of the, I was going to say programs, so one of the franchises to me that when you think about the National Football League, they're one that needs to be up there. How did they get to that, back to that elite status like they used to be?
Oh, they got a long way to go. That's what I think it starts with the front office. You look at the best organizations in sports in general. I just talk about the NFL. They always have great continuity. They have great leadership in the front office. And, you know, Patriots, Steelers, San Antonio Spurs, Yankees to an extent, Red Sox, the list goes on and on. Just some of the best organizations in sports. And I just don't feel like the Dolphins have that. And that's hard. That's basically the reason why they've been in mediocrity the last 15 years, and it's no surprise why during that same time the Patriots have been what they are the last 17, 18 years at this point, pretty much two decades. So, yeah.
Is there any way you can get, like, Belichick to, like, get a retirement home down there in Miami, and you get him to trade him to Miami as a coach, and you can start winning down there? You could beat him, and Miami will win the division.
Well, maybe. Yeah, you would think so. But, yeah, I mean, the Dolphins had an opportunity this year. They started out 3-0. They went to New England and just got pretty much got bullied by the Patriots. And they were never the same after that. They only won four out of the last 13 games of the season after that. So you finished 7-9. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting to see what they do in the offseason. I know Adam Gase, the head coach there, is on the hot seat. Could potentially get fired in the next couple of days. Nothing has been set in stone as of yet, but that's definitely the word I'm hearing around these parts and so far about that situation.
Yeah, I'm hearing that. I read today on ESPN that Pat Fitzgerald the Packers may reach out to him. I just thought that was kind of interesting since we're talking about the NFL for a second.
Yeah, I like what Pat Fitzgerald has done in Northwestern. He's won at a high level, which nobody, I don't think, has consistently won at the same level he has for this amount of time. So I think that would be a great hire for him. Be interesting, too, as well. But Pat Fitzgerald's a young guy, could be energetic. I'm curious to see how his relationship would be with Aaron Rodgers. But if he can hire a really good, experienced coaches around him, it might be able to work there in Green Bay.
And he's from that – from that area, not too far away, so it's like about, 45 minutes or an hour from Chicago to Green Bay. And then I also heard today, interesting enough, from Mike Florio that looks like that the Jets may have an interest in Jim Harbaugh. That was something, speaking out of left field, I don't ever see any truth to that, but I just thought that was, not that he hasn't been in the NFL before, I just thought that he would be happy in Michigan. I know what happened to him in the bowl game, but I think Harbaugh is a great coach. That's me personally. But.
Yeah, I've heard also rumors about that too, which is interesting because they link that to the Dolphins. Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, is a Michigan alum, and he donates a ton of money there to Michigan and really likes Jim Harbaugh. I actually tried to hire him before, but was unsuccessful in doing so. So, yeah, I've heard Jets are definitely interested in Harbaugh. I'd be interested to see if Ross, him being an alumni of Michigan, would allow him, allow Harbaugh to go to the Jets, a division rival, especially considering the ties that he has. But, yeah, I've definitely heard a lot of rumblings about Harbaugh possibly getting back into the NFL, and that game against Florida definitely, certainly will heat those rumors up.
How many coaches do you think will be? We're recording this Sunday night after the last regular season game. How many? I was reading an article. It looks like four coaches will be fired maybe tomorrow. With today at Tampa Bay, let's see, Denver, Arizona, and the Jets with New York. So that's the teams that I saw. Are there teams that you're hearing that their coaches could be fired?
What about Ron Rivera? Yeah.
I'm pretty certain, like I've heard and have pretty good sources there at Carolina that, yeah, he's going to stay. They're going to keep him for another year. Obviously, the change in ownership there, I definitely think, from what I understand, that Ron Rivera will be safe for another year, at least there in Carolina, so which is interesting because obviously they slumped down to a traumatic finish there in Carolina, but yeah, he's going to definitely stay there for another year. As far as the other coaches, it's already been two fired, obviously Tampa Bay and the Jets, Todd Bowles and Dirk Cutter. Yeah, they've been fired already. So Vance Joseph is probably going to get fired. Steve Wilks, former Carolina defensive coordinator, I've heard he might get fired, but I hadn't had anything come from any confirmation on that, but it's not looking good for him there either. If you add in possibly Adam Gase with the Dolphins, Marvin Lewis may retire. That might be another hire, job change there. I believe it's going to be about six or seven coaching openings. Wow. So when it's all said and done.
You got to win now, right? Just like Al Davis said, just win, baby.
Yeah. It's a win. You get 3 years typically. And if you don't win at a high level in 3 years, then they're ready to replace you. That's just the reality of it. It's not necessarily fair, but that's the reality of sports in this day and age.
It's win now. There's a sense of urgency like no other right now. As far as Miami, do you have any kind of timetable that we'll hear? You know that now that Mark Richt, it's an interesting scenario that he retires and end of the year. And I know we don't have the pressure now of the signing day like we talked about earlier. What do you think about, when would be the ideal time for them to hire their next coach?
Well, I would think sometime in the next week or so. You have some players that, especially on their defense, they had whatever you want to say about Miami as a team, but their defense is among the best in college football. I know they got pretty rocked against Wisconsin, but they did have some players out, including Gerald Willis, who I think is going to be a high draft pick. But, yeah, they got some players that are thinking about declaring for the draft. I think the longer that they wait to hire a head coach, the more there's players that are juniors are probably on the borderline. I think they're probably just going to go because they don't necessarily know the future of who's going to come in there. So I definitely think the sooner the better, definitely for players like that and also players that are that have not committed yet. I know you had the early signing day, but we still have the major signing day coming up in February. So you definitely want to lock that down rather than later.
And a minute ago, we were talking about the New York Jets. I don't know how familiar you are with Barry Jackson. It says the Florida Sports Buzz. But he had tweeted out, I guess this afternoon, about 3 o'clock, it said, per source, couple prominent former UM players pushing behind scenes for former Jets coach Rex Ryan to replace Rick. Ryan is believed to have interest if he contacted officially. So have you heard anything about that, any more than that tweet?
Yeah, I know Barry actually pretty well. But, yeah, I've heard a lot of different things about Rex Ryan. I've heard he's planning on interviewing with the Dolphins there as well. He would prefer to be the Dolphins head coach than do college football, but he's prepared to do both, and he's already calling people up, filling the staff together, getting ready for his return to the NFL. So, It's definitely like it's a possibility that he could return back to the coaching ranks, whether it be the University of Miami or also the Miami Dolphins. So, yeah, I've heard a lot of rumors in regards to that.
That'll be great fun for you to cover because they're going to the Super Bowl, baby. They're going to the Super Bowl.
Hey, the Super Bowl definitely is in Miami next year. So,
Oh, that's right. That would be incredible if you got the job and then, you know, you host. That's never happened, to host the Super Bowl. And you
got close, yeah. They got super close, but no, it never happened.
That would be great. Antoine, dude, thank you so much. I appreciate you being on in the last minute, but we had no idea today when we started our day, I guess you didn't either, that Mark Richt wouldn't be the coach anymore, retiring at the University of Miami. It's going to be interesting to see, and I hope you'll come back on once the hire is announced and we'll discuss it more.
Oh, definitely. I didn't know that was going to happen 15 minutes from kickoff either, but that was always convenient. So, but yeah, thank you guys for having me on.
Happy New Year to you, my friend, and we'll definitely talk to you in the new year for several reasons, but certainly with that.
All right, then. Y'all take care.
Hey, breaking news. Feldman, Manny, we're going to have a conversation with Antoine Staley here soon about the Miami Hurricanes, and we didn't mention this guy. Looks like their new head coach will be Manny Diaz.
Wow.
So we look like a bunch of idiots. We didn't bring him up.
I thought I mentioned him when I...
You did. Bubba mentioned him.
You did mention him. Well, congratulations, Bubba. Purple Ridge Feldman. That's not official yet, is it, Bubba? That's just Bruce reporting that?
Yeah, Bruce Feldman's just saying per source that Manny Diaz will be the next Miami coach, and it's not anything official from the university, no.
So Temple, if that's true, is going to be looking for a new coach, and I know who I would hire if I were Temple, and let's see if they're smart enough to do it, and that'd be Greg Schiano.
The Greg Schiano, and how about the Buffalo coach would be great.
Yeah, I'd hire Greg Schiano.
I love Greg Schiano. I'm just saying, if you could not get Greg Schiano, who would you get?
They can get him.
All right.
They can get him. he wanted the job to begin with, unless he's just pissed they didn't hire him, as their first choice. But if not, I can't. The Buffalo head coach, whose name I can't think of right now, the head coach of the Buffalo Bulls, not the Buffalo Bills, but the Buffalo Bulls of the Mid-American Conference. He'd be a good fit for Temple. That's interesting. And God almighty, if you're a Temple fan, how disheartening. You hire Manny Diaz and he's gone before he even coaches a game. I wonder how that's going to work. I mean, they're going to have to pay his full buyout. I mean, he's got a 5-year contract he just signed.
That's right. Wow.
So I wonder, how that buyout's going to work. And, granted, this isn't official, but it's being reported.
The coach you referenced, Kyle from Buffalo, is Lance Leipold. He had been at Wisconsin Whitewater. That had been a D3 power, so they kind of took the same approach that Eastern Michigan did as far as taking a very proven, successful head coach from a lower level and seeing if he could translate that success to the FBS level.
And also speaking of Chris Creighton, you mentioned Eastern Michigan, which is Chris Creighton. That would be another great fit for Temple. I almost would hate to see them hire Chris Creighton, being a conference rival, but that would be another great, great hire Temple could make if they are indeed losing Manny Diaz.
And I don't want to, before we say goodbye, I want to make sure that we talk about that because it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we really do. That's what we're going to be taking a look at everything that happened within the last calendar year as far as ECU athletics, and anybody that's followed the Pirates knows that's quite a bit, so that will be quite the show. And in addition, we'll talk about some of our favorite moments from the first year of the Sports Objective podcast. And then we'll also have a very special podcast with the 1983 team. Of course, 8-3, 13 points from being unbeaten. I guess technically 14 points because 13 was the total margin of defeat for those three losses at Florida State, at Miami, who was the national champion, and at Florida. So we'll catch up with several of those guys, including a couple of very well-known Hall of Fame caliber guests.
And, you know, guys, Terry Gallagher 2 weeks ago said, what are you guys going to do for your 100th episode? Well, Terry, my friend, that's exactly what we're going to do for our 100th episode. We're going to have the 1983 team. We wanted to honor them just like we did the 1978 Independence Bowl team. And thanks to Terry I got a frog in my throat. Thomas McLaurin and all the great Pete folks that came out. And a lot of folks are still listening to that podcast. Thank you so much. And Bubba, I know I want to give you a shout out because Bubba works really hard on this day in Pirate football history. And I know that we've got a lot of player profiles and we've got a lot of great guests that are coming up. If people wonder about football, but we have a lot of basketball and baseball greats, right, Bubba? We don't have to name all of them, but we've got some great ones coming up.
Yeah, we really do. So one of the guys that we will be catching up with, we've been trying to get this lined up for quite some time, just haven't been able to work it out, a guy that played under Joe Dooley under his first stint here in Greenville, and that was Rafael Edwards. Rafael's a very versatile big man. He could play the three or the four. And as we talked with Othello Meadows and Tony Parham, he could certainly put the ball in the basket, and they referred to him as the black hole because once they passed it to him, they knew they weren't getting it back. But we'll catch up with Roth, and then we'll also be talking, like you said, to several baseball players from a variety of eras. First of all, probably some from the Keith LeClaire era, some guys that were a part of that 2001 Super Regional team.
And, of course, with the baseball, it's hard to believe that the baseball season, it seems like we should have another couple months before baseball season starts, but it's literally like a month away, a little over a month. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll keep trying to get one of our favorite coaches, Cliff Godwin. He's been very busy, but we'll keep working on that and have him on, I know, very soon in 2019. That's one of my wishes because I think
we've had Mike Houston on already. We still haven't had Cliff Godwin on. We've had Joe Dooley. We had Coach Montgomery on when he was here. Cliff.
Yeah,
we need you on, brother. Cliff, we're back.
Yeah, huge, come on. Huge fan of Coach Godwin. And so
we are.
By the way, I think it's February the 9th. I believe that's the night of the baseball banquet. And get this, the next week or two, the Student Center is absolutely gorgeous, by the way. The new Student Center is opening up. I think it's January 17th. I'll have to double check. It's coming up in January, so we're right at January now. So in the next couple weeks, that's opening up. The banquet is going to be one of the first things ever at a student center, so I'm very excited about that. If you've been driving up and down 10th Street like I have in Greenville recently, oh my goodness, it just takes your breath. It's so gorgeous. The new Student Center. So very happy about that. By the way, you need to go ahead and buy your tickets because the ticket prices for the banquet are going to go up. Go to ecupirates.com. That's where you can get your banquet tickets. And certainly you can call 1-800-DIAL-ECU. It's their one fundraiser they get every year for the athletic department. Lets them do each individual sport. And the baseball is doing that. So I think that's going to be tremendous. You're helping out the baseball program and got good feelings. We'll have a baseball preview, obviously, but I would just say I've got a good feeling about baseball. I ordered my season tickets. I've never done that before. I usually buy single game tickets because I work nights, weekends, crazy holidays between broadcasting and healthcare and a whole bunch of stuff. But I did it anyway. Kyle, I know, and then maybe Bubba can. We're all going to be there, and maybe we'll give some of my tickets away for people that are loyal listeners to the podcast. We'll figure that out. But I wanted to support the program just like I did Joe Dooley and his staff for basketball as well. And, again, go to 1-800, call 1-800-DIAL-ECU or ecupirates.com for your tickets for the banquet. Basketball tickets, I know there's a big event. The Harlem Globetrotters are coming March 21st. That's going to be a huge thing. So a lot of great things at ECU coming up.
It's becoming a regular thing. Globetrotters coming to town. That's about the fifth season of that game.
What's that?
Globetrotters. That's becoming a regular deal. This is about the fifth straight year the Globetrotters
have been. Exactly. And another thing that Kyle and I love, I'm going to throw Kyle in the ring, is I'm sure they'll have – I was looking for it last night, by the way, Kyle. I didn't see it. I was hoping to be able to tell you, have breaking news about the WWE, but I'm ready for them to come back to Greenville so I can throw you in the ring and maybe we can – we'll have a celebrity death match.
But look, we don't have to wait, David. We don't have to wait for the WWE to come into town. Any place, anywhere, any time, brother. You want to step in the ring, we could do it.
All right. I've been taking my vitamins. I've been saying my prayers.
Well, you're going to need to say your prayers if you're going to get in the ring with me.
That's right. I know that. I know that.
I'm just saying.
And you've got Bubba. You've got Bubba the Hammer Valentine. Right?
That's right. Bubba the Hammer Valentine's right there.
He in your who's in my corner? I need somebody in my corner.
You can put Bubba in your corner because you're going to need him. I'm not going to need him. So
Bubba, you need to have Bubba. Would be an outstanding manager.
But Bubba the Hammer Valentine can be in your corner. I don't need anybody in my corner. I am all I need. I got the Kyle from LaGrange Army.
I tell you, I'm gonna have
Kyle
my corner.
From LaGrange Army. That's all I need.
I'm going to have Jim Cornette because he's my favorite manager.
If you can't have Jim Cornette, I'm going to take Corny. You can have Bubba. I'm going to take Jim Cornette.
Oh, that's not fair. No, you need to have Bubba, and I'll have Jim Cornette.
He'll
throw the roll of quarters at me, and I'll knock you in the head, and then I'll get the three count.
Now you got to get the tennis. You screwed up, man. You got Cornette. You got to get the loaded tennis racket.
Get the tennis racket in the head, okay.
Yeah. And the loaded racket, baby, with Cornette.
Boom. What do you think, Bubba?
There's a segment of the people right now listening that don't have a clue of what the hell we're talking about. There's a segment that does. And the segment that does, I love you.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think, Bubba?
There's also one third of this podcast that has no clue what you're talking about. but with my very, very, and I mean very, limited knowledge of wrestling that you could put inside a symbol. And that would be so one thing that I could contribute is was it ECW or the Sandman that had the Singapore stick?
Of all things for you to know, ECW and the Sandman.
And the only reason I know that, Kyle, is because one of my high school football teammates, he and his family, they got it on pay-per-view. And invited me and my dad over because they thought that we had laughed at it, which we did. Maybe I don't know if it was a Saturday or Sunday night.
Sunday night.
Yeah. So
do you remember which pay-per-view it was by chance?
I have no clue.
Okay.
Because this would have been maybe 98 or 99, somewhere in there.
Okay. Do you remember what month it was? Like maybe can help you.
No clue. All right. But a couple other things that I wanted to throw out there, Dave, that I was going to mention when we were discussing Pirate Hoops, in addition to the performance of Jaden Gardner, just Sean Williams. He shot the basketball pretty well this year. I mean, he was, I think, maybe 33-34% or something going into that A&T game. So he just hadn't had the consistency that we know he can, like he did during much of conference play last year. But he knocked down 6 threes against the Aggies, so that was awesome to see. And then it was also great to see Isaac Fleming knock down a 3-pointer after we had just had that conversation with our good friend Nate Ross of ESPN3. And Isaac had a heck of a game. He flirted with another triple-double, the third of his career. He had, I think, 13 points. 13 or 14 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, and 4 steals. So quite the night for Isaac Fleming, the senior guard.
And we needed that for the point total, like 7 or 8 points. If we could get, and you saw how big we won, you get an extra 6, 8 points from, like I was talking about last time, from Isaac Fleming, and you've got a good chance to win, no doubt. In fact, you probably win most of the – so being 7-5, you'd probably be – only have 2 or 3 losses versus, it's a difference between 2 or 3 losses for sure.
No doubt. Now we just got to get KJ Davis healthy for SMU because he's somebody that can.
I think he's close. Haven't heard 100%, but I think we're going to get him back for that game.
He's someone that can knock down 2 or 3 threes. I think he's averaging 6 boards, which is third on the team behind Seth Lede and Jaden Gardner. And then he can also add some things defensively. He has pretty good length.
No doubt. And with Pirates, we've got a big game on Wednesday night against SMU. And then, of course, Saturday is going to be a huge game. By the way, folks, we need to get Williams Arena packed for Cincinnati coming to town. that's going to be a huge game. And if you guys can join me, I'm going to be there. I'll definitely be at that game on Saturday, the 5th. So not this, obviously, this coming Saturday. It's going to be two great games. You have an away game with SMU in Dallas, and then the Saturday game is going to be home, the first conference game in the American, and against Cincinnati. That's a great way to start.
Yeah, that's a 1 p.m. tip-off. That's a game that the Bearcats and Mick Cronin, I think they're 11-2, if I'm not mistaken, 11-2, 12-2, something like that. So that will hopefully be a great atmosphere. And speaking of the atmosphere, I know on our most recent podcast, we were talking about the $5 tickets. I think a lot of people...
Oh, my God, they took advantage of that.
Yeah, they took advantage of that. The lower bowl was pretty close to being full, and then the nice, not a bad crowd in the upper level as well. And I think the crowd was announced about 4,700, and it was, I'm sure, inflated a little bit, but not nearly as much as it often is. So I think hopefully this is a trend of where the crowds will be headed with a lot of quality competition coming in AAC play.
I think that people are seeing that we're competitive again, and we
still have people wanted to see us beat A&T.
Yeah, that's very true too, and that's obviously with the students not there. So with you throw the students in, so hopefully we'll get some crowds that are up there around 6,000, if not more, and then you add the pep band in, and hopefully we'll have a pretty raucous atmosphere in Williams Arena.
I think last year the biggest crowd was Wichita State.
That's correct. That's right.
And you saw what Menzies could be for about 10 minutes, and then Wichita State just blistered us the last 30.
That's exactly. It was maybe a quarter worth the first part of the first half, and that was it. That's true. So guys, we need to wrap things up. I know you want to give a plug, obviously, some social media, Bubba, real quick.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter at DSportsOBJ. We consistently put out on this day in Pirate history. Today was 12/30/95, which was the Liberty Bowl team that defeated Stanford, and as we said, finished the business. Of course, the motto that year was unfinished business after losing 30-0 to Illinois the year before. So we went back to Memphis and took care of business. Chad Holcomb drilled 4 field goals, a dominant performance by the Pirate D with Mark Libiano, Emmanuel McDaniel, Hart Twins, etc. So
Travis Darden.
Yep, Travis Darden. So many great players. Look forward to having defenses like that in our future. But follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ and on Instagram at The Sports Objective, and also our YouTube channel. Subscribe to that. And that's something that's probably where we're least active, but that's something that we'll be continuing to improve moving forward in 2019.
And don't forget, of course, our New Year's podcast coming up in the next couple of days. Plus, we have the 1983 team, honoring the 1983 East Carolina football team. It will be our 100th episode, and we'll have that out this week as well. All right, guys, we'll put this podcast to bed. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and for Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.